Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss all of the Apple news that there's been. It's been a light news this week, but we'll have a few conversations as well. We've had some feedback from last week as well on the show on the speakers and stuff, which was kind of interesting, and we'll deal with that. But joining me, a fantastic panel of people. We've still got an issue with one of the lines working. So Patrice may get joined by Will halfway through. How are you doing, Patrice?
Oh, I'm doing much better. I was kind of sick the last 2.5 weeks, also while I was traveling. That was awesome. But no, I'm good.
And how
happy to be home.
How was Alabama, mate?
Hot and swampy. That's what I'm going to say about it. Food was awesome, but it was like, I mean, for someone living in the desert where it's like, well, that's like 5% humidity or something, it was horrible there.
You didn't get chased?
I don't know how anybody can live there.
You didn't get chased by a couple of blokes in a canoe who wanted to shag you, did you?
No, fortunately, no.
Excellent.
And no one with a Bible was following me either.
Try going back for Dragon Con in August.
Why? Because then there will be people who want to shag him. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, I was talking about the hot and swampy part, but yeah. Well, it is a bunch of nerds, so, you know, anything's a possibility.
Yeah. The dulcet tones there of Adam, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing all right. I also think Patrice is getting ready for his ASMR stream on Twitch later.
Cool. What is he streaming?
ASMR.
ASMR, right, okay. Cool. Have you had a good week, mate?
I've had a great week. Yeah, it's been all right. It's been nice and cool here, more or less.
The devil in you.
Huh?
You sound like you got the devil in you.
Oh, is my audio messed up?
No, as in you've got a bit of the cheek about you today. You're feisty. You're looking for an interesting time.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the solar flares.
Baking my mind.
With a full moon attached, we've been talking about solar flares because everything's gone wrong today. I can't get me Mac Pro to stay up and show the screens for very long without it recycling itself. Then my computer froze and it was, give over. And Adam's like, it's the solar flares. Apparently there was a big release of solar flares yesterday. And they're probably hitting us around now. So
I think it's just ongoing. There's a sunspot. I don't know.
Yeah,
all my technology this week went haywire.
That's every week for us, mate. So obviously the sun that we've got is generating them. Next to Chuck, you've made it, mate. We were worried you weren't going to get here, but you're here.
I did. I actually got even here on time. How about that?
That's awesome. Brilliant, mate. How have you been?
Terrific. Doing very well. Be doing better if we could string 2 sunny days together in a row here in the northeastern United States. But it's been rainy and damp and muggy. You know, we can't even dream of 5% humidity. We're at like 99.
I was gonna say, has it been humid though? Because that's the worst.
We had to drive down from New Jersey to Georgia to get some good weather
humidity.
A couple weeks ago, and I want to get out on my kayak.
Good. Humidity is the killer, mate.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Oh, Patrice has got raw heat, but
well, you need to come out here to the desert with Patrice and I.
It was so good. I left Atlanta. It was like temperatures in the 80s, which is like, what is that, 25-26 degrees Celsius, I think. It felt like I was going to die, and I came in here and it was 105, which is like 40 something degrees, I think, Celsius, and it felt like heaven. It's like, so much better.
This is dry. And last but by no means least, James Ricards. How you doing, mate?
Good afternoon. Nice to be back. Everything's good. Well, it isn't, because air conditioning stopped working, so with the heat, it's unbearable. And then just telling you guys that the gears stopped working, and being a automatic, it's going to work out very expensive. So that's not great news, but the best news is I've got to cuddle a small child.
With an 11-hour drive ahead of you, though.
I know, 650 miles, it's going to be repaired, isn't it? I'm not leaving the UK till it's done. My plan was to leave on Wednesday, return back to France, but I think it's a 3-day job, so I may still be in the Blighty this time next week.
Who knows? You might be here for the bash.
Not a bad. Oh, my God, imagine that.
Bring it out and stay until the bash.
That's I can't. My son's got a job, so I've got to get him back. I've got to get him back, otherwise I really, really would.
That can't be that important of a job. The Bash is coming up 6th, 7th and 8th of July. 6th Friday for the Curry. There's going to be a Mac show here at 4 p.m. Then all back to the Kismet, and we'll probably have a curry, and that'll start around 6:30-ish, something like that, 7 o'clock. And then we'll all start eating about 8. And then back to mine for a few beers afterwards. And then on Saturday, the Bash starts proper down at the Link. Normal venue, all the usual fun and games, and loads of stuff to do, and loads of great people to meet. We've got a fair few tickets have sold this time, so that's really nice. If you'd like your ticket, you can still get a ticket. You can still come down. Just send me the information, and I'll send you a link to where it is and all that kind of stuff. But it should be an absolutely fantastic affair. And then we'll all go back to mine in the evening, and we'll have another curry from Kismet delivered to my house. We'll all sit and eat it in the garden. It'll be absolutely wonderful. And the good weather is in, apparently, for the next few weeks. So there's a good chance that we're going to have good weather for the Bash. So please, please, please get your tickets in and get yourself along, because you will have a great time, I promise you.
Right. I can now confirm that the curry is fantastic.
After of course, yes.
Talk about it for a whole years, I can confirm the curry is absolutely fantastic. And thank you very much for treating me last week. It was very good of you.
Oh, I think it's the least I could do after I'd lifted your speaker off you.
yeah, no words.
I love that speaker. I have been sitting playing that Sonos all week. I'm not a great music listener sometimes, but that has been on non-stop here. It's been brilliant.
It's nice. Well, at least it's being used.
When the other one comes next week, I'll have a pair. It'll be awesome. It'll be incredible.
You're not buying another one.
Yeah, of course I am. The week in Apple, what's going on then? Popular Mac developer Quentin Carnicelli has said that Mac software is shit, and Mac hardware is even worse. He has said, actually, Apple is in a sad state of affairs with Macintosh hardware. Mac Mini is 1,338 days since the last update, and a whole pile of other stuff. And he's given it a real good slagging. Is Mac hardware in a bit of a state, boys?
depends on your perspective, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on your needs.
Is anybody going to say no to that?
Is anyone going to say no?
First. Right, so you're not a hard no.
So hang on. The idea of the show is I ask a question and you buggers give me an answer. So pick an answer for someone. Say something. Have an opinion, for Christ's sake. Get off the fence.
Yes, it is.
It's in a state. Why is it in a state, Chuck? Thank you.
Because it's been neglected. I think Apple hardware is fantastic, and it got to a certain point where you're not going to have these revolutionary revs anymore. But we still need evolutionary revs. We still need speed bumps. We still need new technology to be considered. We still need another port in some of our laptops. It's been, I think, just forgotten about, really left by the wayside. And I'm sure at this point, I'm absolutely convinced that there is a lot going on with Mac hardware within Cupertino, within those big vaulted walls. But we've got to start seeing something outside the walls. I mean, 1,380 something days for the Mac Mini, if I'm not mistaken, even that last change was nothing really major, just some kind of very minor spec mm-hmm. increase.
It's actually a step backwards, depending on your view of things.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say, because
didn't they
I forget who it was who made the point that it's really kind of insincere to call it a mini anymore. It's three times as big as anything of that power needs to be. It really needs a refresh. It really needs either to have Apple do something with it, or just say we're not going to and kill it. Kind of with the same idea with the Mac Pro, they finally luckily said, no, we're not going to kill it. We're behind it. We're going to do something with it. I'd love to see them do something with the Mini. I'd love to see them do make some more improvements with the laptop line. The iMac, I do like what they've done with the iMac. I'm not going to lie. I still miss optical drives, but I'm over that. It doesn't hurt as much anymore.
Go on, you really want SCSI back, don't you?
Yes, give me SCSI.
Oh God!
I want my use for my Terminator.
Apple Talk. Still
at my Terminators and SCSI conflicts. Yeah, that's what we want.
Yeah.
See, I've got it in my head. Oh, it does do. Because I was going to say, I thought it did. I thought they went up to Core i7 on it. But I'm looking at Core i5 and it says configurable to 3 gigahertz dual core Intel i7 as well. So there is an i7, I was right.
But it's an old i7, a lot of the big complaint is it's over a year. Like every machine other than the iMac Pro is over 365 days old. We're at like 380 or 90, I think, on most systems, and that's the complaint. I disagree with Chuck, and I had mentioned maybe a year ago, maybe longer, that this is what Apple was going to do, that they're going to move to this 12 to 18 month upgrade cycle. And I think it's happened because we're at the point where the processors just, I mean, you can rev a processor every 6 months, but you're not going to gain a whole bunch of performance or anything for that. It's such an incremental upgrade, and what most people are using their computers for, it doesn't make a difference. So this 6 month upgrade cycle is actually kind of ridiculous in my opinion when you think about it. Now it sucks when you're the person who wants to buy a new machine though, and you realize you're buying something that's over a year old, right?
That's
where the problem comes.
But even the yearly upgrades on the CPU level are very minor.
Yeah, I don't want a 6 month upgrade cycle. I would be perfectly happy with even an 18 month upgrade cycle, but something, something.
Well, we're not to 18 months then. So then your argument gets shot down.
But what is 18? I think most of the machines that I've talked about haven't really had much of a rev in 18 months. And I think
the numbers are almost everything in the lineup has not been revved for about a little over a year. The only exceptions are the iMac Pro, which is a new machine, which just came out. The Mac Pro, which obviously is really old, but not as old as the Mac Mini. So the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini are the two biggest neglected systems.
Yeah, the MacBook Pro got a spec bump as well, so at last year.
So the official statistics are iMac Pro 190 days, iMac is 382 days, MacBook is 382, MacBook Air is 382, MacBook Pro is 382, Mac Pro is 444, Mac Mini is 1,345.
Right.
Okay. And they've all got don't buy on them apart from the Mac Pro, which is a caution.
Right, so there are all these fairly long refresh, since the last refresh. And
but not 18 months, not really. Most of them. That was my only point.
But I think my point is if it happens on a more rolling basis, if you see new stuff coming out, at least on some kind of regular basis, I think that's going to make a lot of people happier. I think when the big rev is, the touch bar on the MacBook Pro, I think, that's still pretty controversial. I don't think Apple knows what it wants to do with that. It just seems like an unthought out upgrade process, design process. And part of the issue too is that Apple has locked itself by its designs out of being able to upgrade to the fastest processor because of heat problems. The architecture won't support it. That was the big issue with the Mac Pro, is that they designed themselves into a corner and they couldn't make the upgrades because what things had evolved into wouldn't fit into that design. And I just would like to see a little bit more thought put into that. Make us feel like we're not abandoned.
I actually disagree with you on that point. I think Apple put a lot of thought in the Mac Pro, the old Mac Pro. The industry just isn't evolved the way Apple thought they would. I mean, Apple thought everything would go down to like having multiple graphics cards and all of that. And that didn't happen. And they couldn't support the bigger graphics cards that they wanted to, because those were single big graphics cards instead of two smaller ones. I think there was a lot of thought put into it. And I think I see the same thing with a MacBook Pro. You could say what you want about the touch bar. I definitely agree that it's not used to its full potential. But I see that they thought about what they could do, what they could improve, what they could do better on the MacBook Pro, and put a lot of thought in that as well. I think it's just a matter of that their priorities are so heavily on the, well, either on the new product or on the existing, like on the iPhones and so on, and they don't really see, yeah, they don't have time for the Mac. That's my feeling, really.
Yeah,
I think they've moved it into a scheduled update. I mean, again, I'm fully believe we're going to see updates in September. And the unfortunate thing is Apple is now on this September update cycle for everything, which is massively bad for people's pocketbooks. Yep. But I mean, you're going to see Macs updated every 12 to 18 months from this point forward, just because, and they will be on a set schedule. So we'll see updates of everything. I'm pretty sure in the fall. I don't know if it'll necessarily be September, but around September, you might have some come later. The only one that I have questions about is the Mac Mini. And obviously the Mac Pro, Apple has said, is going to be sometime in 2019. So those are two edge cases. But the core lineup, the iMacs, the MacBooks, the MacBook Pros, the things that the majority of people buy are going to be on a 12 to 18 month upgrade cycle, update cycle from, I think, this point forward until maybe until when Apple starts doing their own processors. I don't know. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's buying cycles of consumers. It's the state of just processors and graphics cards and memory. And it's also a little bit of how Intel is revving their processors and what they're doing.
Yeah. And remember back in the day, I mean, I remember when I bought my first Mac, Apple was on a 12-month cycle. I mean, every October, there was an October event where Apple released new MacBooks. That was for years, the cycle. So it's not that this is a new thing, really.
Chuck, you had a point. You go ahead.
Well, a couple things. I think that if they do start to go on a 12 to 18-month cycle, upgrade cycle, and I don't doubt that they will. I think it's probably a long time coming. That's great news, but it hasn't been the case. And it will address a lot of the concerns about the Mac being abandoned. But again, that hasn't been the case, and the Mac has felt like it's been abandoned for a while. And let me just say right up front, I'm being purposely curmudgeonly with all this stuff because I think a dissenting viewpoint is good on it.
I'm just asking for where the evidence that hasn't been the case is.
Yeah, well, I think we can go back to what some of those updates were and. You know, is it really?
So you're talking about major updates, like major design changes, not just.
I'm talking about processor bumps. That let the Mac take advantage of the latest processors and the latest architecture, the latest graphic cards, and I think that even the very very minor updates that we have seen are falling a little bit behind that, and I think that there has been an overall feeling that the Mac is not getting the kind of attention that Mac users would like it to be. And even going back to Patrice's point about the Mac Pro, he says a lot of thought was put into that. I agree, a lot of thought was put into it. But I think a lot of that thought was from an egotistical standpoint. I think a lot of the thought was in response to the criticism that that Apple couldn't innovate. And, you know, that's why they wanted to show something very innovative and very different. And they brought out the trash can Mac, and Phil Schiller said, you know, can't innovate my ass. And they made that point, and then they never touched it again. I'm optimistic that things are going to change. I do think that Apple has heard us, and I do look forward to more frequent upgrade cycles. But I think we've been a long time getting here.
Do we think this is partly due to the fact that they could possibly be working on their own silicone, and they're actually, you know, their head is somewhere else in the game?
You're reckoning they're waiting on new processors?
Maybe they are working on their own silicone. Yeah.
They're making their own processors. Is that what you're saying, James?
No.
They're going to wait and make their own processors?
Well, yeah, we know obviously that's definitely on the cards with the amount of silicon that they've been making and the amount of engineers they're hiring. Is that something, do you think that's why their head's not on the game, as it were, that they're actually doing a lot of testing with this, and maybe we'll see something very soon that has Apple's first processor in? I guess we all know it's in the cards.
Those are two separate questions in my mind. I don't think the Mac upgrade cycle is being impacted by that work. I think they are working on it, absolutely. And I think that's their vision moving forward, is they're going to do their own processors for the Mac eventually. As far as are we close to seeing a Mac with an Apple processor in it? I do. I think we're within 3 years, we'll see one. But it's likely going to be a slow rollout, and it's going to be something like a MacBook Air. Exactly. James put that in the chat. So you're thinking along the same lines. It'll be a MacBook or a MacBook Air at the lower end of the lineup that they'll start with, and then they'll ramp it up. But for that exact factor, I don't think they're distracted. I don't think we're not getting new Mac updates because they're working on that, because they're going to have probably both in the lineup for a while, where you've got Intel's on the higher end, you know, for the higher performance stuff, and then starting with the Mac stuff. Although the Mac processors may blow us away. I mean, there's a counter argument to that, where people say, you know, Apple's silicon on the iPads is in some instances performance wise outperforming, you know, some of the Intel processors. So, you know, they could go all in. They could blow us away and say, all right, we're, you know, just like they did with the switch from IBM to Intel, one event, boom, we're moving. That's it. All systems forward are going to have our chips.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen this year.
Oh, not this year. No.
But that's
within 3 years.
But that's the point that Jones is making there. It makes so much sense, because why would they stop revving things? They'd stop revving things because they would have to look at airflow around the chips and cooling, and the chassis then dictates how that air cooling is going to take place. And it's probably an argument between chassis design and chip design, who has priority over the cooling process. That would probably take quite a while to discuss and to level out. So the lull is definitely on the cards for, you know, it's a logical assumption, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the new iPad Pro, especially 12.5-inch one, it's so incredibly impressive. And Affinity Photo, once you start sort of dealing with layers inside of that application, it's absolutely flawless. And you've got to think, you know, you put a keyboard on that, and that's Apple's first computer. You know, that's the MacBook replacement, if you like. An entry-level Mac, but it's definitely... it's definitely something that Apple could do, I think, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, I've said in the past on a Mac show that, I mean, I think if they put that in a desktop machine, which gives you more power because they have bigger batteries and gives you also more thermal space, so you can, I mean, increase the clock speed of the CPU, I think, and you have heat cooling and all of that, I think it would be way more powerful, and you could even do 6 or 8 cores if you wanted to, probably. So I think it is definitely possible that they could bring out something, maybe not a Mac Pro, or maybe only an entry-level Mac Pro, but definitely a MacBook level machine they could bring out easily. I think at this point, I think it's more a software question than a hardware question. That's my, at least my gut feeling, really.
There's also a theory out there that, again, that they are going to do the first machine to have Apple's processors is not going to be on the low end. It's actually going to be that Mac Pro that they've been working on, and there's some theories out there that's part of the reason why it's taking so long. And it's the theory is, well, they don't make as many of those, so it's a perfect place for them to do experimentation with that. And if they could pull it off, then they prove in a really huge way their acumen for making processors.
And is that processor going to be holy shit expensive, or are these going to be cheaper for the Mac user in the end because they're made by Apple?
I don't know.
Probably a bit of both.
Right, okay.
Yeah, Apple doesn't do anything cheap.
Less expensive than Intel, but holy shit expensive anyway.
I mean, they're more likely to take it in profit margin than pass it on to the consumer.
Yeah. Apple is accused of having a monopoly. A class action brought in 2011 was thrown out by the district court in Northern California in 2013, but the appeals court for the Ninth Circuit has allowed it to proceed last year, and it's going to hit the Supreme Court because they're saying, well, people saying, I want to buy an application for my phone from who I want, not from who you want. And the Apple, I'm surprised actually that the EU haven't weighed in on this, because you look at the amount of money that's around for developers and for Apple in the Mac App Store. It is a monopoly. It is an extorted monopoly, is it not? Start with the tough stories, boys.
No one wants to take that bait.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'll take it just because I'm the guy.
Here we go. Good on Chuck. He's the only one that's brought an opinion.
Just for debate club purposes, I'm going to say, yes, it is Monopoly. I'm going to say, yes, that the argument that you don't have to buy an iOS device is absolutely valid. But if you do, you are locked in and you cannot buy from anyone else that Apple doesn't. Not only that Apple doesn't curate, there's a lot of great things about the curated garden approach in terms of, you know, make sure app quality is high and, you know, malware doesn't get in or tends not to get in. But there's also the business aspect of it. You're locked in, and Apple is not just locking in consumers, it's locking in developers, because if you want in, then you got to, you know, give that 30% cut or whatever it drops down to. That includes the subscriptions, and then you have all sorts of issues with, developers who won't let you buy within the application because then they have to give the cut to Apple, so you have to have these funky workarounds to go to the website. So there are a lot of issues with it. I don't know that just opening up the platform to any developer is the right answer, but just for terms of this argument, I'll say, yeah, I think you can make a strong case that Apple is a monopoly in this instance.
So Apple have made, over the years, $70 billion from that. That's a good business. There's not a lot of businesses make that in their entire lifespan. And they are still subject to monopolies and mergers regulation.
Apple hasn't made $70 billion. They paid out $70 billion.
No, they paid out $100 billion, which means that they've made $70 billion from that. No, hang on. They've paid out $100 billion to developers. So they've made twice that. That's $200 billion.
That math doesn't add up.
They paid $100 million. To developers, not billion.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? 100 million to developers, which means Apple has made another 200 million. Because one third went to developers. So two thirds went to...
No. 70% goes to developer.
Yes.
Ah, 50. So Apple have made 50 million. There we go. I've done it. Finally. Apple have made 50.
It would be 30.
Oh, mate. No, they've paid $100 million to developers, so Apple have made $50 million out of it. I'm right. Now I'm right. It's million, not billion. It's Friday.
You're messing up the percentage.
No, Apple I'm not.
70% to the developer and 30% to themselves.
Yeah.
So take 100.
That means they've had 50 million.
By the way, it was 100 billion, not 100 million.
It was 100 billion.
Yes, I just checked.
So they've made $30 billion in developers.
No, they've made 50 billion.
No, because that's the 100 billion is 70%.
Yeah, so they've made made 50 billion. I'm right. I am right. There's three chunks in the pie.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So Apple made 50.
In actuality, it's about 43 billion.
Thank you, Mr. Decimal Point.
Yes.
Just three chunks of pie, right? One third of the chunks of pie have gone to Apple.
Yeah, no, I was getting stuck in that the 100 was the total, not the 70% paid out. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Friday afternoon hard, that one. That really was Friday afternoon hard. So 50 billion to Apple is a big chunk of change for a monopolistic business. I think there is a certain, you look at how much is, you look at the monopoly and thing on browsers that was in for Windows, the Windows browser palette thing. That's a small chunk of change in comparison.
Well, the difference there was that you really didn't have a choice. I mean, you could only really go with Windows at that point.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, that was a monopolistic market, and there is a monopolistic market in terms of the Apple Store. So.
Couldn't you apply that to everything? I mean, I don't know, Walmart. Walmart has a monopoly on their shelf space. It's the same thing. Yeah, you can go to another store.
Yeah, but you can buy the products in Walmart.
Right next Walmart. And you can walk into that one, or you can walk into the independent that's down the street.
Yeah, and they sell different products.
If you go to Walmart, if you're a Walmart customer, Walmart has monopoly on their shelf space and they get paid for it.
No, that's rubbish, Patrice.
No, it's the same thing.
No, it's not.
If you get a Walmart competitor, it still goes in your refrigerator and you can drink it. If you buy an app from a different developer, it won't work on your iPhone.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Well said, yeah.
Yeah, so the stuff in Walmart doesn't work in a Walmart refrigerator only.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. That's a better
answer. So, I mean...
Jesus Christ, boys. Don't make it harder.
I think I can agree on the argument being made for they have a monopoly, or they've set up a monopoly in terms of the place that you can buy software from, and also the place that developers can sell software from. But for a lot of the reasons Chuck was mentioning earlier, where it gets dicier for me is typically the advantage of not having a monopoly is that you get competition, and it's more about pricing and better quality and all these sorts of things for the consumer, right? You get better pricing, better quality stuff because there's competition going on. If Apple loses the App Store monopoly, I don't see much advantage for us as consumers. Like it feels like a bigger downside to me.
And remember, being a monopoly in itself is not illegal.
It is
what you do as a result of that monopolistic position.
It's we have a Monopolies and Mergers Commission here, which, if they feel that there's a risk of a monopolistic market, they'll act proactively.
Yeah, to prevent it, but having a monopoly still isn't illegal. I mean, Microsoft had a monopoly and it wasn't illegal to have it. What they did with it, how they acted as a
but you will get
having a monopoly,
up.
That was the issue.
Yeah, if you are monopolistic, then you will get broken up.
Not always.
Yeah. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
No.
But kind of back to my point, and Magic Man puts in here, the benefits of the App Store outweigh the downsides. You know, maybe, and that's what I'm asking about. Like, do we want a non, you know, do we want to be able to buy stuff outside of the App Store? And what does that look like? I think a big portion of people that want to have consumers have the ability to buy stuff outside the App Store are those people who want to make apps that don't fit into the rules that Apple has set up. And there's a valid argument for that those developers should be able to make the apps that they want, and the people that want those on their iPhones should be able to get them. I kind of believe in that. But at the same time, you know, like, I've benefited greatly from the App Store as a consumer. I think developers also have a bigger argument for wanting to be able to sell stuff outside the App Store, just in terms of Apple not taking 30% of you know, their potential profit.
Yeah, and I focused on the profit aspect, but Adam brings up a really good point about, you know, the limitations on features from the developer side. I mean, I think we've all seen a lot of examples of iOS developers that either had to kind of hobble their products or pull out of the App Store because Apple would not let them have access to the APIs that made their apps really useful. And sometimes sometimes it was because they competed with an existing iOS app that Apple produced. So going outside the Apple Store would increase freedom that way.
But that is a different argument, because having access to APIs that are not public is something different. I mean, that is actually protected, as far as I know, even under copyright law. So I think that argument I wouldn't really accept. That, I mean, apps that access private APIs should be allowed to, because that's not true even on, like, on the Mac or on the web in general.
Point here from Deeppan in the chat room. He says, could Apple just start saying you can buy non-Apple endorsed hardware and software, but we'll no longer support our products if you do that? Yes, but they never would. That's not going to happen.
Deeppan brings up another really big part of this argument, right? Is one of the advantages of having an App Store and a closed ecosystem is that Apple, as a company, doesn't have to deal with all the stuff that breaks when people are able to install apps that might be malicious or apps that are doing things that, you know, are trying to skirt around APIs and and use stuff that's closed for security reasons and stuff like that, and stuff starts breaking, they're not generally, in a lot of cases, going back to the developer. They're in at the Genius Bar, right? And so there is a pretty hard cost for Apple that comes into play if they open things up and they lose control of that. So, I mean, it is a valid point. Is like, if Apple does have to open it up, if they're forced through legislation to open it up, they may have to take that kind of tact and say, look, if you buy everything in the App Store and stay inside our ecosystem, we'll support your products. If not, you know, you're out in the Wild West and you're going to have to get help another way.
Well, and just remember, I mean, just like on the Mac, that doesn't mean that there are no rules on the system and no, I mean, there aren't any limitations that Apple can set. Apple on the Mac does with, like, I mean, with all the protection security measures in place, it actually does protect the system even if you have apps that are not bought in the App Store. And I don't think that will change.
Well, what's interesting, even more interesting thing about that, and this has come up this week a little bit too, is look at the health of the Mac App Store ecosystem versus the health of the App Store ecosystem. Hmm. And so is that because Apple forces the monopoly and it's really not better? Or is it because the experience is better across the board on iOS versus Mac when it comes to the App Store to app relationship? And I don't know what the answer to that is, and that's why I'm kind of throwing it out to you guys. But it's an interesting, that's a whole nother part of this to think about, is the Mac App Store ecosystem suffering because it's in this weird quasi state where it's not closed, or is it something else? Is it the other way around? And, you know, I don't know.
Option C, because it was neglected.
Yeah. That's another argument. I mean,
you know, part of what does work for some developers is that it does give them a platform and does put a spotlight on their apps. So if you can get it, and obviously in the Mac App Store, it's a lot less crowded than the iOS App Store. But it can give you a small app developer, at least who's willing to play by those rules and put up with those limitations. It can give you a little bit of a spotlight to get popular. Whereas if you're on the outside of that, it can get harder to get noticed and get attention.
Comment from Magic Man in time, this is just because someone wants to make a name for themselves and make some money. I don't think it is. I think there's a valid concern that should be raised, and I don't have a problem with it going to court for a decision. The benefits of the Apple Store outweigh the downsides. I mean, you quoted that, and I'm like, that's okay as long as you're in the ecosystem. If you're not entirely in the ecosystem, then it is restrictive. And I've got to say that there's times when I don't want my iPhone. I want to try another phone that's got a better camera on it, that's got better features, and it would be great if I could do that. But then all of a sudden, there's no Apple Music anywhere. There's no, you know, that's kind of service is pulling me constantly back towards the hardware. So there is a monopolistic element to Apple that takes place there, I think. Apple is considering removing the Lightning connector. Was considering removing the Lightning connector on iPhone 10. There is a stated thing here. During development of the iPhone 10, Apple weighed removing the wired charging system entirely, and that wasn't feasible at the time because wireless charging was still slower than traditional methods, including a wireless charger. The long-term goal is believed to be no ports.
We spoke
about last week, and the biggest thing that come from that is if you look on Amazon, etc. Now, the Qi chargers are so cheap. I mean, you see them as little as $6.99 now. You know, they are no money. Whereas before, you were looking at, you know, around $60 for a Qi charge. And I love it because Amazon is a great marketplace to find those chargers. So you pretty much put one in any room of the house now. And that means obviously the uptake for people like Costa Coffee and Starbucks to put them in their stores will be cheaper as well. I just think it makes sense that, as we said last week, that there's no need for any other charger than the Qi one, really.
Well, charging is one point, but I mean, the port serves other needs, like, I mean, diagnostic. I think Adam mentioned that in the MacCast, actually.
No, hang on, because didn't you say to me last week, James, that most of the diagnostics are done via wireless now in the store? It's rare to plug it in.
Yeah, it's rare to for a genius to go upstairs and actually bring down a laptop. I mean, you know, it just doesn't happen. All of the diagnostics are done by the wireless internal network, which is hidden from the user who goes into the Apple Store, it's a hidden network.
Yeah, but it's not just diagnostics, it's also recovery, right? I mean, if you need a hard recovery, I mean, in extreme cases, there's going to be points where you want a wired, you may want a wired or a hard connection, I think is the argument.
But it's not the norm.
But Apple could solve this because, I mean, this could be done like contactless something where you have a special pad that transfers data in addition to whatever power.
This came up last week too, and I think you made the argument, which is right currently, that technology is really not well developed. I think you may even pointed out that it didn't exist, and I did a little research after it and did find out that they do have some ways to do like through magnetic fields data transfer. I don't know how fast it is at this point or anything. So it would be technology that would need to be more fully developed to, I think, replace something like a lightning cable, because obviously, you know, that technology is super quick and fast and adaptable, whereas the wireless stuff, I think, is a ways off. But I mean, we could have said that about charging, you know, 10 years ago, and here we are. I mean, we can do some pretty good charging, and we're getting nearer and nearer to the point where you have true contactless wireless charging. So it's just a matter of having a need and the technology being researched and developed and pushed, right? Yeah. So
there's also the issue that the air power will not be coming until September now.
Oh my God.
As James has just said, you can go on Amazon, you can buy a charger that will charge at the same rate that won't have any problems whatsoever for £6. Apple's never going to produce this thing at a purchasable price where anyone who's got their head screwed on is going to actually pay the money for it. It'll only be you lot who are sad fanboys.
No, I'm not. I have no interest in buying one. I didn't have an interest in buying one when they released that thing. That thing's going to be like $200, and it's I don't know what Apple's thinking. And also, can they stop pre-announcing stuff that they're not going to ship? Like, what's up with that? That's something new that Apple's been doing that's getting really annoying.
Yeah, I think you would have to say that, Adam. Please, Apple, stop pre-announcing stuff.
Yeah. I mean,
go back to the old way where we didn't know till it was ready to ship. Like this, this idea that you're going to like say, oh, here's this thing and it's going to be out in 2018. And then they come back around and go, well, no, it's not going to 2019. I don't know, 2020 someday.
For hardware, they've always done that because I think they had to, because it otherwise would have leaked anyway. For new hardware. So the iPhone was like 6 or 8 months announced in advance and stuff like that. But for software, I don't see a need for that.
Hit your dates. That's the difference, Patrice. Right. I mean, yes, they did that, but they didn't miss the dates by 6 months or a year, right? They occasionally missed it by a month or two, but I mean, they're pre-announcing
white iPhones?
You know, a year and a half.
With the original iPhone, they had to because of the FCC filing.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. They knew that it was going to get out.
With the Apple Watch, the same. As I said, with new hardware, that's usually the case, and that's fine. And usually at that point, the hardware is more or less done.
And it also becomes a lot harder to keep these things secret when Apple's producing things at the volumes they are too. It's, you know, when you're producing, you know, tens of thousands of units, it's one thing to keep it under wraps. If you're producing tens of millions of units, it's a completely different story.
Bob Beach.
Just one last thing.
Go on. Sorry.
I was just going to say the air power is basically going to amount to Apple's Apple Watch charger. How many of you guys have one of those? The little disc. Does anybody know that Apple actually makes a stand charger for the Apple Watch?
They do, the white one.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, no.
I bought a third party as my travel.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's going to be in the same realm. There's going to be a handful of people that have them, you know, and some people will like them, and that's great. You know, I'm not saying it's not good, but it's not going to be flying off the shelves. It's not going to be like the Apple Pencil. You'll be able to, if you want an air power mat when it gets released, you'll have no trouble getting your hands on one.
Right. But I think they're also overcomplicating it, right? I mean, it's not like the Qi charger, which is a circle and has the coil in it. They're trying to make this, you know, oval sized mat that can charge multiple devices. So the sweet spot's got to be bigger, and so now they have to have overlapping coils, and it's just a very complicated thing to try to get done. And it, again, you know, it's Apple making it very complicated to, in order to look simple. Whereas, right, you know, the easier solution is just to take James's advice and buy $6 cheap powered chargers and put them in every room.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I honestly believe Apple wanted to release it with the iPhone. And I mean, as you said, it was too complicated. They couldn't get it done. And then they thought, well, we could ship it a little bit later. And that didn't happen. And now they're basically just waiting for the next hardware revision and saying, hey, see, here's new hardware and there's a charger for it.
And the rumor is it's heat problems, right? Because when you get that many coils that close together, you've got thermal issues.
Yep.
Bob Beach says,
Bob Beach says thing.
That stuff, Bob Beach. Carry on, James. Go on, finish it, James.
No, as I've written the chat room, you know, anybody's got AirPods, you know, who's going to change their AirPod case for a wireless charging case for the sake of throwing it down on the charging pad? I don't think there's going to be many people that do
I'm
that.
Not bothered.
This could be that might be a bit more popular later on, but right now doesn't make much sense. No. For many people.
I'll get it when I replace mine. I'm not going to pay $70 for a case for my first gen ones.
Exactly. Bob Beach, shut up. Bob Beach said, I had a choice, go out in this beautiful afternoon or sit and listen to some old farts droning on about Apple. Yet here you are, Bob. Yet here you are.
You're welcome.
Angela Ahrens talks Apple retail in a new interview. Apple retail is not dying. It just has to evolve. And she said, you get the third-party guys in, and the third-party guys give you an idea what's happening. She's saying that typically people will still be buying stuff in stores. She doesn't think that there's the Apple stores going anywhere, and people will still put their hands on the products before they purchase it for 70%, 75%, despite the increase in online shopping. I thought that was quite interesting. 75% of products will still be bought in store.
Right. Well, I mean, they have the perfect model, right? They make stuff that breaks and then get people in there and then people buy crap.
Yeah. Well, I think
because you're there for 3 hours while you wait for your genius bar appointment. What else? Right.
It's cunning. It's cunning.
Yeah, I think for physical, for hardware, for physical things, there's value in having a store where you can go and see it and touch it and decide. I mean, and selling it in store simply sometimes means with Apple nowadays that they order it in store and they ship it to you, because if they don't have it, they just ship it.
Right. And I think Apple has it exactly right with the retail stores. And I spent 10 years in retail and I love it. It's a great business. I don't think it is dying. I think Angela Ahrens is right. But Apple has the right attitude. They don't care where you buy it. You know, they're there. It's there as a showcase. It's there so you can get your hands on it, so you can look at things while you're waiting for your genius bar appointment. I think that's brilliant. But at the end of the day, it's about attribution. Buy it online, buy it, or walk out of the store with it. Apple really does not care. Their salespeople don't work on commission. They just want to help you get to know the product. And as long as they're treating that attribution properly, as long as they're not looking at, you know, sales per square foot of things that were actually purchased in store, and rather they're saying, they can determine that, the store lifted the online sales X percent or whatever, then those stores are still going to be successful. And if you just go in and look at how crowded they are, and it's not all just people waiting for their genius bar appointment.
That was obviously a joke.
I mean, it's also about mind share and about like
Patrice. Stop, Patrice. Let Chuck finish. Sorry, Patrice. Good Chuck. Say what you said at the end.
Sorry, Chuck.
No, that's fine. I just think that it's the best way to experience those types of products. Get your hands on them. Let somebody who can show you the power of what they can do walk you through things. That's what gets you excited about it. That's what starts turning. My big thing in retail was always, we're not just going to go from generating awareness to acquiring a customer, right? It's not awareness to acquisition. It's beyond that. It's keeping that relationship going until that person becomes an advocate for you. So it's awareness to acquisition to advocacy. And that's what Apple does with the stores, and that's what they do so brilliantly with it. And I think Angela Ahrens, who has been behind the scenes for the most part, has done a phenomenal job of making the Apple stores a truly integral, critical part of the ecosystem. Now I'm done, Patrice.
Yeah, I didn't want to stop you. Sorry. I mean, adding to your point, you're absolutely right. I think it's also, I mean, maybe that's the awareness part. Stores also give you mindshare. I mean, people walk into malls. I mean, look where the stores are located. It's not somewhere in the outskirts where a lot of people only go if they need something. They are usually very, I mean, either in malls or in very central locations, so people see them. They see also, I mean, the whole experience. They see the quality of, I mean, the interior, the architecture, depending on the store, actually, a little bit. They see that, and that keeps you in people's minds. I mean, otherwise, yeah, you have to come. I mean, you're always competing against attention. I mean, again, if you look at online stores, I mean, Amazon and Apple and a couple of the other big players, they have a pretty good mind share, but they're always competing against like Netflix and all the others, all the other things that are, I mean, seeking our attention. If you're out and about and you're walking around and you see an Apple store, that's the only thing you see, really. That brings your brand and your products back into people's minds, and I think that's important.
With Apple stores, yeah, they, I mean, yes, we all make it sound quite lovely, but they are massively sales driven. You know, with the managers, etc., massive sales driven. You know, one manager can see from an iPad what another store's revenue is up to the minute. And when you're working in the same market, Apple almost encourages that kind of challenges between stores, you know, who can make the most revenue, etc. That is something that does go on in the background. And it's nicely done. It's not like a forced thing, but it is part of Apple retail. And the fact that the Genius Bar is always at the back of an Apple store, which is encouraging you to walk through it anyway to go to your appointment, speaks volumes as well about the business. You know, another point is an Apple store is very much like a car showroom. You know, owning a Mac is probably going to be the third most expensive thing you might own after your car and your house. So you do want to go to the store. You do pick up and, you know, test the weight of it. I can remember first going to a PC World after working for Apple for, you know, I think 10 years that I have done. I remember taking somebody to PC World to go look at a MacBook. And the first thing I did was try to pick the Mac up off the actual table. And lo and behold, PC World actually screwed them down. And something you do very naturally in Apple stores to go off and pick up to test the weight of a MacBook or a MacBook Pro. Suddenly that experience is taken off you from a third party company, which is astounding, really. But, you know, you do want to pick these things up. And I think Apple have got it absolutely right the way they lay the store out and the way they actually sell that device to you, because they know it's a huge amount of money you're about to put down. And quite rightly, you want to see that Apple computer from every angle before you make a purchase.
Bob has said that he bought his 4K Apple TV online and he picked it up at the Apple Store in Leeds instead.
Right.
So online brick and mortar can be complimentary. I don't get that. Because I've
always... Buy online. He did the in-store pickup, so he bought online and then went in to pick it up. Is that what you're saying you don't get?
I don't get, because if I order it online, it's because I want it delivered. If I want to pick it up, actually, no. I go into the
Maybe
store.
You don't want to wait for it to be shipped.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just bought a HomePod yesterday and I picked it up at Best Buy, but I ordered it online because I could order it there and then just go there and pick it up. That was easier for me than having it shipped and waiting for it.
And you have to talk to fewer humans that way too.
Yeah, that's
true. Why didn't you just go to Best Buy and buy a HomePod? Excuse me, can I have a HomePod, please?
Talk to humans.
Yeah, then you got to deal with like, people.
Oh, of course, Patrice's antisocial nature. Yeah, I forgot about
that. Yeah.
Just go in and pick it up.
Is it because in Arizona, no one understands a word he says?
No, that's not true. I mean, you can pay online. You can, I mean, all of it. The entire experience from a savior.
Yeah, sorry, Patrice. It comes from a similar mental place. Like, I only buy coffee if I'm going to go to Starbucks now from the app and pick it up. I want to have it there waiting. I want to go in, have it paid for, not have to do a transaction in the store, which slows things down. I want to just go in, you know, swipe my thing, show my card or whatever. If it's a piece of technology, right? You have to kind of show your ID and they hand it. Someone goes in the back and hands it to you, but that's the whole exchange and get in and get out. So a lot of times it's just that, you know, that whole experience.
It's convenience, isn't it? And also, right. if you do an in-store pickup, when that person meets the greeter, if you like, on the door, you know, the Apple employee does have a...
Oh, we'll never know what the Apple employee does have.
Actually, prior... Sorry?
James, stop downloading the porn and say all that again, because we didn't know what the Apple person would have.
Well, the Apple person has a... if somebody comes in with an in-store pickup, they are actually prioritized above anything else. In other words, as soon as you come with an in-store pickup and you say to the Apple employee on the door, oh, this is my order number, the timer starts going, and they've got to get that package down to them pretty damn quick, because Angela said that that's got to be priority. The reason why I've done that is because they don't want to be in the store, so let's make that process as quickly as possible. So there is a prioritizing thing about when somebody does come in with an order number from an online online store.
Magic Man has tried to justify my comment about saying, well, you may not be in for the delivery, in which case, don't order it online. Just go to the store and buy it. That was my point.
Right.
My point is, go to the store. Why order to go to the store when you can just go to the store and pick it up anyway?
Well, one reason is because you don't know for sure if they have it in stock when you get there. And if you order it online, then you're sure that it's going to be there when you walk out.
I'd just refuse on principle. If you haven't got it in stock, not having it.
Wait a minute.
Plus, you can look
at that in the app before you walk in, right?
You can see the stock, yeah. But if you're online seeing the stock, it's easy to pay for it there and just walk in and get it, I suppose. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
Magic Man's also put upstairs at Regent Street, to which I've replied Shaka when the walls fell, but I don't think he gets it.
The other experience that I like with Apple, and this is Apple doing something that Amazon's trying to do now too with their new walk-in, walk-out stores, right? Where you just walk in, grab what you want, and leave. Apple's been doing that for years, and I still use that from time to time. If I'm out and about and I'm like, oh, I need that thing, go into the Apple store, like a cable or an accessory or something like that, pick it up off the shelf, pay with the app, and walk out is brilliant.
I haven't got that experience.
I was going to ask if they still did that.
They still do, yes.
I nearly did it, and then I bottled it, because just in case it didn't go through, I didn't want to get a stop.
The receipt goes through within... You actually get a prioritize on the receipt. So by the time you are actually walking towards the door, the receipt should automatically be in your on your phone. That's what they're relying on, really, is the fact that if you do worry about it, that receipt should show up straight away. So if there's any problems, you just turn and show them your phone.
I have never been stopped, not once, ever.
Yeah,
like, same. And I picked up, you know, things that are several hundred dollars, scanned them, and walked out.
Magic Man's now saying you can order 24 hours a day online, even naked.
But you can't pick it up naked.
You could.
Yeah, but Ewan can pick it up naked.
Yeah.
If he's having it delivered.
No, that's not my point, but never mind.
Right. He's going to blow.
Over my head, says Magic Man. Yes, definitely. I've used Scan and Pay many times, says Bob Beach. It's great.
It is great.
This podcast and all this is brought to you by Telestream. We'd be lost without their support. We really would be lost, because we were doing Google Hangouts the other week because I updated the machine to High Sierra, and then Wirecast 6 that we had didn't work on it. So they've now given us Wirecast 9, which is just a brilliant piece of software that I still don't know how to use properly. I need to have time. I'm going to have a day next week where I'm going to sit down, I'm going to update all the machines and try and make sure I get them all running, and I'm going to sit and watch videos on how to use the Wirecast properly, because it's I'm not getting the most out of it by a long, long way. It's fantastic. It is a broadcast piece of software that you can use if you've got a church service that you want to broadcast to people outside. I went to a funeral today. It was quite a nice affair, actually. It wasn't sad at all, despite the person dying was fairly young, only 50. But they broadcast it outside. Well, you could use Wirecast to broadcast to people who can't get into venues. You could use it for sports broadcasting. If you've got a popular local football team or stadium, you could broadcast it to the bar or outside. You can use Wirecast for that. And it's got pan, tilt, zoom camera control as well. So you can remotely move those pan, tilt, zoom cameras live during your activity. It's absolutely wonderful. I cannot recommend it enough. I do love using it. We've used it, and they've given us free versions and supported the network for quite a long time with this, since 2011. So You know, I would say thanks to them, and yes, it's a great piece of software, but it really is a great piece of software. So I urge you to go and have a look at it. It's really, really cool. Thanks to UK2 as well. They always support us. They've been great. They've given us all the server space. And the Not Quite Live channel as well, that you can go back and watch all the old shows. And they do storage for us that comes to 3 terabytes, because all of the shows we've ever produced in video and audio are all on our server. It's just incredible. So please check them out. And my other pair of Uniku glasses have arrived. So I now have both pairs, the Vision pair and the British Tech pair, for using on the shows. I can't wait. I cannot wait. I hope I'm going to get to see Mark next week, because if I'm not, I think I might explode. I'm excited like you wouldn't believe. And he won't post them to me. I think he's got a fit them and stuff. So it's just, oh, come on. Just the stems at the back bit, you know, the bit right around your ears. I'm excited, Mark. Stop punishing me.
Like a first year at Hogwarts.
Oh, yeah. No, actually, someone, I showed a picture, this picture to someone this week, and I got the Harry Potter had a hard paper round comment. but someone did also said, you look like the love child from Hagrid and Harry's Mom's Affair. You bastard. But I don't care. I'm going to wear my Hoya Unikus with pride, because they look amazing and they feel great. This is really like stuff they like. You're all just jealous. You're being nasty because you're jealous. That's all it is.
Yep.
Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Patrice. Stick it in the chat room for us. There's a good boy. Oh no, I forgot what I meant to do. We had some feedback last week. Do apologise. Chris Smith wrote to us on Twitter and said, when Adam tested AirPlay versus Siri, using Siri directly on the HomePod, and it was quieter, did his phone have sound check on, as that drops the levels of all tracks so it can balance them, so it would take the edge off the level coming from the phone only by a few decibels, but still enough to notice?
Adam, right, nope. You don't use sound check. It was through iTunes, direct over AirPlay. Now, again, it was AirPlay 1. I haven't done it with AirPlay 2 yet, so okay. I don't know if that makes a difference.
Right, so there you go, Chris. With regards to no EQ being directly available on the HomePod itself, technically if you AirPlay to it, you can still use the EQ presets on your iOS device, or if from iTunes on desktop, then use the actual GEQ. Now, I know about the iTunes one, I could, but is the iOS EQs not in music, though, is it? It's not in the player on music.
It didn't make a difference at all.
Yeah.
I think it's in the settings for music, and I think you can only, it's really inconvenient because you have presets, you pick one, and then you're stuck with that one until you go all the way back to settings or something.
I was
going to
say, it's not an active EQ. You've got to come out of the app and then preset it and then go back in, haven't you? Yeah, that's what I thought.
I think that's what I remember. I haven't done it in a while. I never use it. No, I don't think anybody ever actually uses it. Do they?
It's in music settings, says Bob Beach. And his last point was, my Bose SoundLink Mini, when turned up to full, will automatically turn down the bass to protect the speakers. So assuming these speakers, all of them minus the studio monitors, will probably do something similar. So listening at, say, 50% may improve results. Actually, I've got to say, I don't get that feeling with the Sonos. If anything, the bass got louder. What was interesting is Ellis came down here on Monday night and he said, oh, look at these speakers. He says, they're cool. Can I have those? I'm like, no, you can't. They're for ear. And he said, all right. And I said, oh, well, you can have my old Bose SoundLink if you want. I've got a SoundLink 3. Take that and use that at home. And he said, all right, fine. And I put it on and played the Eagles track through it. It sounded like shit.
Did it?
Because I played the Sonos and I played him the Eagles track. And he was just like, that's old music. I'm like, yeah, but listen to the quality, man.
Listen to it.
Yeah. You Philistine. And then when I put that on, I played the same track through it, and it was the difference between the SoundLink 3, which I've always adored and thinks is an amazing sound, was horrific in comparison to the Sonos Play 5. It was just, but then it would be. Okay. I get it. Sorry, Patrice. It's your cool thing. Thanks for writing in, Chris. Do appreciate that. If you've got any letters, send them to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, and we'll discuss them. Any questions, any problems with your Mac, we'll help you out. Right, Patrice, what have you got, man?
So I have this little thing, if you can see it on a video. It's a kind of a MacBook case / iPad Pro case or iPad Pro back, but it has included something that I really enjoyed and something I was looking for. It has a section where you can basically organize all your cables and chargers and other bits and bobs and all the adapters and all that.
Cool.
And it's cheap. It's like, what was it, for the 15-inch version, it's $19 in the US.
Wow.
And they have 11 and 13 inch as well. And it's, as I said, it's very well built. It has a soft, a second compartment just for your Mac or whatever else, iPad, whatever you want to put in there, which has a really, really soft and nice lining, which I really liked. And it's cool. It's really easy. It fits into my backpack. It's just a good thing that I have been looking for and finally found. Company is called iCozier.
Yeah, available in the UK store as well. I'll just put the link under.
Awesome.
It's available in UK Amazon, $16.99 in UK Amazon.
Mm-hmm. So it's cheap and it's right. Actually very, very good. Good quality and very useful.
That's brilliant. Just bought one. Bastard.
Good. It's Prime. It's free, right?
It's free, yeah, no. I just clicked that and it was like, which card do you want to use? What card? What is that, like a library card?
Yeah, £17, Ewan, that's a great deal.
Oh, it is, but the thing was, I wanted to take my MacBook to the pub last night to talk, because Muller's doing all the bookings for the shows for guests and stuff from now on. And I wanted to take my MacBook down and show it. And I was just like, I've only got my really big bag at home. So in the end, I just showed him at home, and then we went to the pub. This would have been perfect. Would have been ideal.
Yeah, and it has a handle and everything, so it's easy to carry.
Bought. And I love the cradle thing with all the little pouches for your charger and stuff. That's really cool. Perfect for a trip to London when you don't want to carry the big bag. Good pick, mate. Good pick, because I just bloody bought it. Adam, what have you got for us, mate?
So I have a audio tool. If you do anything with audio files, I think you should probably have this app for your Mac, and it's Fission from Rogue Amoeba. And what's great about it is it allows you to quickly and easily edit, slice, join, pretty much do anything that you're going to want to do with your audio files. But if you're not doing conversions, it also does it completely losslessly. So if you have an MP3 and you just want to cut out a piece of it, or you want to join a couple MP3s together, you just do it in Fission, save it, and it is super fast and quick. Also, just the user interface for it is really clean, simple, easy to use, easy to figure out. I use it for my podcast now ever since, because I do the chapters and chapterized MP3s and AACs, and Apple in their infinite wisdom decided to remove that from GarageBand. This is now a critical part of my workflow for my podcast. So I record everything in GarageBand. I export into Fission for doing that. And one of the features that's really handy there is you can save out something that's called a cue sheet. So if you put in your chapters in one file, you can save that out and then just apply it to another file. So I have two file formats. I have the MP3 and the AAC. I can just quickly apply those to that, and I only have to do it once instead of twice. It's just, I mean, again, if you're working with audio at all, you should probably have a copy of Fission in your toolkit.
I have it. It's so brilliant. Seconded. I love it.
Yep.
Third.
And I can't believe I haven't picked it before.
No.
I think it's one of those things. It's one of those things. It's just like a tool that you have, and you use it so much that it just becomes like a thing that you don't often think about. But it's critical to have if you deal with audio at all.
Excellent. Good pick. Thank you, mate. Chuck, what do you have for us?
Well, I have something really cool, but first I just want to throw in another word for Rogue Amoeba, because they are fantastic. All the things that they produce are terrific. And I was just really, I was talking about them last night because they just introduced a new feature to one of their other apps, Audio Hijack.
Audio Hijack,
I was really kind of mulling over the attention to detail that they give their user interface and the functionality of that. I mean, they are apps that do very specific things, pretty highly technical things. They don't have to put as much thought and polish on it as they do, but Paul Kafasis and his team They do it because it's the right thing to do, because they're really devoted, and just I can't say enough about them. Fantastic. But that's not my pick.
Okay.
My pick is if you've, you know, we try to schedule things all the time, you know, even for the show, we go back and forth, and it's always, the conversation is along the lines of, hey, let's have lunch next Thursday. Well, I'm busy Thursday. How about Friday? Friday's great. I can do noon. No, noon's not good for me. Can you make it at 1 o'clock? Well, 1 o'clock, I'm busy. How about 11:30? And, you know, you go back and forth, and it can take forever to get these things settled. There's a great new app, new app and service by a guy you may have heard of. His name is John Chaffee. He's of BusyCal fame. He's a great guy, a friend of mine, and probably some of the people on the show. He just launched a service and an app called When Works. And the idea behind it is it's an iOS app that you can use to set your availability. I'll take phone calls at this time across the week. I'll, you know, have meetings, be available for meetings here. Syncs with your calendars so that as you schedule your meetings, that availability disappears from the app and the service. So you can send somebody, you know, you want to have lunch next week, just go to this link. It'll show them all the times that you're available. They can click on one. It'll send an invitation to you. It'll take it, remove it as something that's no longer available on your calendar. You get a confirmation. You're all set. They can go back and reschedule if necessary, and it'll just update your calendar. Really seamless, really simple. If you've ever used Calendly, it's a similar service to that. But it's got some extra features to it that I think make it really easy to work. You can set global parameters so that block me off for my, you know, my lunchtime from 1 to 2 every day of the week. I have my staff meetings from 3 to 5 on Mondays. So don't, you know, let anybody schedule appointments for those times, that kind of stuff. The really cool thing is that it's free not only to try, but free to use for up to 5 appointments a month. So if you're just a casual user, you want to give it a try, you'll never have to pay for it. If you do use it more than 5 times a month, they ask for $5 a month as a subscription service. I'm normally not a big fan of subscription services, but it seems to make sense in this case for me. So $5 a month, unlimited scheduling. The other person does not have to have an app. You get your own link, and other people can view your calendar. Really dead simple to use. You can update your availability on your phone if you want. It syncs to any kind of calendar you can imagine. Works beautifully. I've been trying it out for the past couple of weeks. Just really worth a shot. I put the link. Oh, Patrice beat me to it. Thank you, Patrice. Patrice put the link in the show notes. It's when.works, and it'll tell you all about it. You can sign up for your free account right from there and put it to use. Really neat.
I love the reviews on this. This is, I don't know whether it puts these up at random, but it's pulled an absolute blinder. There's most of it saying, oh, it's got potential, but there's a few tweaks, you know, 4 stars, something like that, or great concept, 5 stars. And then this one's put a 2-star review saying it's too limited. And he says, I tried it, but ultimately deleted it. I'm a local Santa who books time for personal home visits during the Christmas season. It's only one friggin' day. Jesus. It's not flexible enough for my use. It's one friggin' day. 25th of December, deliver parcels. That's all it's going to say. James, what have you got for us, man?
Obviously, Patrice will know all about this, but WWC have just released all their videos now, the video sessions from the WWC. So now you can watch them all over on the developer.apple.com website under videos, WWDC 2018. And there's some great stuff in here. But these are just like, you know, it's like you're sitting in the audience watching these brilliant videos. And the one I want to kind of draw your attention to is the one called The Life of a Button. It's session number 804. And it's just incredible to watch somebody on stage talk about the design of a button, what we expect a button to do on an iOS device. And it's just, you know, you've got some time to watch these videos. There's hundreds. And on the back of that, Apple Store in Birmingham at the moment are running something called Quick Start Coding with Swift Playgrounds.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah, so this is new. It's not happening in any other store apart from Birmingham at the moment. So you can go along and actually learn to code in Swift. So this isn't for kids. Well, I guess it could be for kids. You take your kids as well. It's certainly marketed at everybody. It's for anybody who actually wants to look at Swift and starting to code. If this is successful, that we will roll it out across all Apple stores across the world, which I'm sure they're going to do because I know they're being booked out constantly. They've got one tomorrow, I think it is, from 4 till 4.30. And I believe that what they do is they show you how to make an app with a photograph, and then they show you how to put filters on that photograph and make it black and white, etc. But you go through the process of how that's all coded, and they show you all everything from start to finish, which is brilliant. You know, actually being able to learn to code from an Apple store is unique, and there'll be many more like that if that's popular.
I put the links you mentioned, or the session in the chat. I also put another one in that's also great. I think it was called The Qualities of Great Design. It's also a very good session. Both of them were awesome.
Anyone can watch these, right?
Yep.
Yeah, anybody looks can like watch it. Them. They're open-ended, and it's like you were in the audience at the WWDC 2018. They are fabulous. And if you think of making an app, I honestly watch them because you'll be blown away by the amount of detail they're giving you.
James, do they still have the channel for those on the Apple TV?
Oh, yeah. Good question. I've not seen it.
They have the WWDC app you can use on the Apple TV.
Yeah, so that makes it dead simple to watch them all. It's really good that they do that.
What I usually do is I favorite the sessions or the videos I want to watch, and then on the Apple TV you can just limit it to the favorites and then just watch them.
There you go. Enjoy.
Good pick, mate. Like that. Chuck's inspired me, so I'm gonna do a Rogue Amiga. Jesus, that's going back.
Rogue Amiga.
The Rogue Amiga.
Video toaster.
1989.
Like video toaster.
I'm going to do Rogue Amoeba and do... I'm having a stroke. I'm sure I'm due a stroke. That's my speech. Sound Source from Rogue Amoeba. It is brilliant. I use it on both my computers, and I wouldn't be without it, especially the production machine here in the Mac. Because the Mac will send audio through to the two monitor speakers if I want to get it, or I can use the two monitors in front of me, or I can use the local one, or I can put it onto a set of headphones if I'm checking audio just before I print a film out. So I need to bounce backwards and forwards between three or four different audio sources. And all it is a menu bar item, and you just pull it down and you just pick the source that you want for the input, for the output, and for the effect. And it just lists all your sound cards and all your sound devices. You just drag and click it, and that's it. And it automatically switches straight over to it. So I can't recommend it highly enough. And the best thing is, I think the basic version's free. And then I paid $10 for mine to unlock all the other features. But you can get the basic one for free. Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
Well, as always, every week here on The Mac Show, and everything I do on thepatrice.com.
Thanks, mate. Where are you, Adam?
You can find me at maccast.com or maccast on your favorite podcast app, and also maccast on Twitter.
Thanks, man. And Chuck?
I am at Chuck Latornis on Twitter. That's probably the best way to find me lately. When I do write something, it's usually for macworld.com. You can check me out there, or the Mac Observer. I've also launched a marketing consulting business where I'm trying to consolidate all the kind of freelance things that I do. That's called Kavooza, CAVOOZA.com. So you can check things out there. You can get in touch with me. You can even schedule a meeting with me via WenWorks if you're so inclined.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. And James, where are you?
Yeah, just get me on Twitter at James Rickard. That's RICKARDS. Thank you so much.
And you've got iDiscover TV as well if you want to learn how to use Motion, haven't you?
Yeah, so obviously I'm running a code at the moment which will get you £20 off that training. That's at iDiscover.tv. So if you want to get into Motion graphics, Motion 5 is a great application, very cheap to buy off the App Store. And I'm working on the Final Cut 10.1 as we speak. So there'll be a good amalgamation of the two very, very soon.
And the offer code is BTN Rocks for all BTN listeners.
It is BTN Rocks. That'll get you a code. So
brilliant.
Jump on.
Motion's a lot as hard to use as you think. I did offer that one. My Macworld talk, I was either going to do, I did all the core applications, what the core applications can do for photographers without buying anything else. And that's the one I actually delivered, but I did offer them that don't be afraid of Motion, because I was just going to show some basic effects in Motion that were dead easy to achieve. It's a really easy piece of software to do the basics in. BTN rocks at idiscover.tv. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. The network is at British Tech. Bash is in 2 weeks. Get your tickets. Get yourself sorted. Get yourself in. It'll be loads of fun. There'll be loads of people there. It'll be a good, good time. And the weather's going to hold. I just know it. We've always had good weather down at the link. It's never been bad, so it'll be awesome. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.